Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. A little bit uneasy.
Really? What are you uneasy about?
A little bit afraid.
Oh, yeah? You feeling fear?
Well, we're in the studio. It's kind of a small space.
I see. Yeah, yeah.
That's a common fear is claustrophobia. Or agoraphobia.
Agoraphobia. What's the difference?
Actually, I've heard agoraphobia used to describe people who have a fear of small spaces and open spaces.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to have to check that. It seems strange that you would use the same word for both.
Do you have a fear of small spaces?
I do.
You do?
I do. So we're in the small studio.
Okay.
Feeling a little uneasy, but I'm okay.
You're okay. All right, that's good. I don't really mind small spaces too much. It doesn't bother me.
No?
No.
So that was one of the stories in this month's Core Audio was the story of revolving doors.
Right.
And how that was built, or that created a phobia in some people of small spaces.
Yeah, that was really interesting how the revolving door itself was a solution to a problem.
Right.
And the problem was a fear.
Right.
So it was a solution to a fear, but yet that solution actually caused
fear
in other people. And I actually understand that fear a bit. Like as a small child, I got a little nervous going through those doors because they seem kind of powerful. And if you're not paying close attention, you just feel like you can get swept up in it and it can crush you or something like that. Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, I feel like I heard stories about people's feet getting eaten up by escalators.
Uh-huh.
So I was always kind of afraid getting off of an escalator.
Oh, really? An escalator?
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter's afraid of elevators. She was, actually, when she was younger. Yeah. She just didn't want to go in them. She always wanted to take the stairs.
So was it glass elevators or any elevators?
Any elevator. Any elevators. Yeah. She just didn't like the feeling of being in that small space and going up and down.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
But revolving doors, a lot of people, I don't think it's at a phobia level, but people just don't like them.
Well, hang on a second. When you say at a phobia level, what do you mean by that?
Well, like we talked about in the Core Audio, I think the difference between a phobia and a fear is something that disrupts your life.
Right.
Or diminishes you in some way.
Okay. Yeah, right. So like, for example, some people have fear of dogs, especially big dogs. And maybe a normal fear might be if you see a Rottweiler or a German Shepherd or some mean-looking pit bull, you feel kind of nervous and a little bit uneasy. And I think that's a very normal, common fear.
Right.
But like if you avoid going to the park, you know, for years on end because you're afraid you're going to see a big dog there, that would qualify as a phobia because it's disrupting your life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Or like a fear of heights. I've got a fear of heights. But it doesn't stop me from going up high in buildings.
Right.
I actually kind of enjoy.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoy it, but I'm afraid of it at the same time.
Yeah. It makes me a little uneasy, too. But another example of a difference between a phobia and a fear is the fear of flying.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that are afraid of flying in airplanes. And as irrational as that fear might be, still many people have it. And as long as you can deal with it, it's a normal fear. But if it's something that, if you don't attend your best friend's wedding because you're afraid to get in a plane, then that would qualify as a phobia because it's extreme and it's disrupting what normal people would do.
Stopping you from having normal relationships.
Yeah, exactly. Now, speaking of this, do you have any full-on, full-fledged phobias that you can think of that have disrupted your life?
No, I've got like regular fears.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe not so right. Like, I'm afraid of the ocean.
Just in general, or like swimming in the ocean, or getting on a boat, or what?
No, I got no problem being in a boat, and I have no problem scuba diving. I actually love scuba diving because I've got control of my air, and I've got fins on or flippers. So it was like you're Aquaman, you know, like superpowers under the ocean.
Right.
But if I'm just snorkeling. Or if I'm just swimming, I mean, snorkeling is okay. At least I've got I've got my air tube, but and I've got fins. But if I'm just swimming, I get really uncomfortable. And I'm a poor swimmer, and I just don't like the idea of being a part of something so huge that I can't see. I can't see what's going
Actually,
on.
That makes me very uneasy, too. I'm afraid some big fish is going to come and take a bite out of me.
Yeah. But if you've got your oxygen under control, at least you can see what's coming your way.
Right. So there's a measure of control there.
Yeah. But, you know, I've always been, I've almost drowned a number of times because I'm such a poor swimmer.
Yeah.
I almost drowned in a lake, in a river, and in the ocean.
All at the same time.
All at the same time.
That would make me pretty afraid, yeah, too.
All in the same day. It was a challenge.
It was a horrifying day for you.
But the worst was when I almost drowned in the Pacific off, mm-hmm, of Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So this was maybe about 20 years ago, uh-huh, and I was studying abroad. And at that time, my good friends from New York came down to visit me, and we decided to go to the beach.
Uh-huh.
And I went out in the ocean by myself while my friends stayed out on the sand.
Yeah.
And I got caught in a riptide.
Uh-oh.
So the undertow,
yeah,
current was pulling me out.
It was pulling you out. Yeah. Not sideways. It was pulling you out.
No, it was pulling, yeah, me out. And I realized that I was trying to fight it, which, of course, you're not supposed to do.
Yeah.
You're supposed to go, you know, parallel with the beach until, right, the riptide dies and, yeah, then comes in. But I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't know that at the time?
No, I didn't know
that.
Oh,
man. That must have been really frightening.
It was really, yeah, scary, and I'm a really weak swimmer.
Yeah. So what'd you do?
I was panicking. My heart was starting to pound. I was trying to remain calm, trying, uh-huh, to wonder what to do,
yeah,
seeing that I wasn't making headway against the current.
Uh-huh.
And just as, like, I'm starting to really panic, my friend on the beach,
yeah,
spots me.
Yeah.
And my friend was like on the swim team. He was like a really strong,
okay,
swimmer.
Good.
And he yells, "Dan, are you okay?"
No.
And I remember thinking, "Oh, he found me. Sean's, yeah, gonna save me." And I, yeah, exactly. I yelled, "No." And
he gave you the thumbs up sign. Okay.
That's exactly okay. What happened.
Oh, really?
He yelled. He said, "Okay, I'll see you back at the hotel." So what happened? He thought I had yelled,
no.
"Yeah." I thought I had yelled, "Yeah."
Right.
And so anyhow, I'm still here to this day. So
what'd you do?
Obviously, I did get pulled a little bit parallel to the beach where it was a little weaker. I was able to swim, but it wasn't intentionally.
I just got lucky.
I got lucky.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a really frightening experience.
Wow.
For me. And I remember I was so angry.
So does this fear of water affect you today?
No, but it makes me still angry at my friend Sean.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Because when I got back to the hotel,
he gets no Christmas cards from you.
When I got back to the hotel, I was like, why didn't you help? And of course, he said, "Well, I thought you said yeah." And then he goes, and then he says to me, he says, "Man, I'm really glad you didn't die. That would have really sucked for a trip."
Yeah, I bet.
That would have been a real bummer for our trip.
Wow. Wow. So fear of water is something you
I got a little bit of fear of water, but of course, yeah, it doesn't stop me from going. I like being on boats.
It's a normal fear, yeah, that might be a little more extreme than other people.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Okay.
Yeah.
I got one of those too.
What do you got?
Fear of getting up in front of other people and performing.
Uh-huh.
When I was young, it manifested in piano recitals. And as I got older, it manifested itself in public speaking. And ironically, that's what I often do as part of my livelihood, is speak in front of other people. I get up every day in front of classes of 20, 30, 40 people, and I give talks throughout the year at various conferences and venues related to language learning. And I often have to stand up in front of hundreds of people at some of the school assemblies that I attend. So, I mean, it still makes me nervous to this day, and it hasn't been easy to deal with. I remember as a child, I had a piano recital, and I got up in front of 40, 50 people, and I had practiced really hard for my musical piece. And I got up there, and my mind just went blank, and my stomach sank, and I got the chills, and I couldn't remember anything. I couldn't do anything. I sat there in silence in front of dozens of people. And luckily, my mother knew me very well.
Uh-huh.
And she had brought along the sheet music from which I used to practice.
Uh-huh.
And she walked up in front of this audience and handed me the sheet music. Uh-huh. And at that moment, my memory suddenly came back at seeing those notes again. But yeah, that's been a problem all my life. One of the very first talks I ever gave, my mouth got so dry. I was so nervous that I couldn't, my tongue stuck to I couldn't talk. I had to run to the bathroom and gulp down water from the sink just to wet my mouth and run back in the room to give the talk. So,
So, you know, what's
yeah.
interesting is like probably at that time you've probably been a teacher already
Yeah, that's
for
true.
quite some
No, it
time.
has. Yeah.
And what I think is interesting is how like a different context can totally throw you off, you
Yeah.
know. I remember when I went to grad school, I'd been a teacher for 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
And I remember the first talk I had to give to the other students, some presentation. I remember my heart started pounding. And I was like, what's going on? Like, I talk in front of people all the time.
Yeah.
But just having this different
It can
context.
sneak up on you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can sneak up on
But
you.
clearly, you've gotten over that. You do quite a bit of public speaking.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I haven't gotten over it, but I have, I guess maybe a better way to describe it is I've learned to deal with it
Yeah.
better. And I've gotten more skillful with dealing with it. And one of the main things that I do now is I label the feeling differently. You know, in the past, I'd feel those feelings. I'd feel my stomach getting butterflies, and I would feel my mouth getting dry and my thoughts getting very scattered. And I would say, "Oh God, I'm nervous. I'm scared. You know, what am I going to do?" And now I relabel it as something as excitement. This is some. Oh, I'm getting geared up. I'm getting ready for this talk I'm going to give. And just that very simple act of relabeling it with a positive label rather than a negative label has helped me deal with it. And so that's one of the things. And of course, breath control is another one that I definitely practice in those situations. I make my breath long and smooth, and I focus on it, and that helps calm me down and focus. So yeah, there are some tricks to it that I've learned
A
along the
lot of
way.
boxers and martial artists talk about that.
Talk about
They
what?
talk about the fear that they have.
Oh, going into
You
a
know, not necessarily the fear of physical harm. These guys fight for a living.
Right.
They're not afraid of getting punched or getting an arm broken, but they're afraid of putting it all on the line and losing.
Oh, I see.
And so they got a lot of nerves
Yeah.
before fights. Now, I'm sure not all guys, but a lot of guys.
Yeah.
And I've heard quite a few different ones talk about like relabeling. You know, fear is
Oh, really?
excitement.
Oh,
Yeah.
interesting.
Nervousness
How
is
about that?
excitement.
Oh,
And
okay.
trying to use it to get ramped up.
Yeah. Well, actually, another thing that people do to combat fears, and I know this is actually one of the treatments of a severe phobia, is something called a fear ladder. Have you ever heard that term before?
No, what's a fear ladder?
A fear ladder is when you expose yourself to the object of the fear in stages, in graded stages. So let's go back to that example of being afraid of big dogs.
Yeah.
You know, if you're terrified of dogs to the extent that you can't even walk in the park or walk in your neighborhood, or you totally alter your life because you're afraid you're going to run into a big dog, that's something that needs to be dealt with. You know, that's not a normal fear. And one of the first ways that you can start confronting your fear is just by looking at photos of big dogs. So that would be the first step, is like getting comfortable looking at photos. Maybe you post some of those photos in places in your house where you see them frequently, like the kitchen or the bathroom, and you just get used to looking at pictures of big dogs. And then maybe the next step would be watching videos of dogs barking or interacting or playing. And you got to choose dogs, that is, videos of dogs that are you're afraid of, like Rottweilers or, you know, big Mastiffs or something like that. And then maybe the next step would be to approach a dog, but from far away, you know, like keep a distance from a dog. And then maybe the next step would be, over time, as you get more and more comfortable with it, actually get closer to a dog.
Right,
Let's say
step by
like 5
step.
or 10 feet away from a dog. And then eventually, like, go up next to a dog and actually maybe touch it and pet it. And then eventually, like, spending time with dogs and playing with dogs. And yeah, and it over time, if you take it in steps, it's not as overwhelming, and you can deal with those steps along the way. And by the end of the period, you know, here you are interacting in an intimate way with the object of a severe fear that you used to have.
So that was the technique in the core audio with the woman who had the zombies.
Yes.
I think one thing we didn't mention was that the very first step was just going to a video store and just looking at covers of DVDs with a zombie on it. And she slowly moved to renting it but not watching it, just keeping it in her house, being able to sleep with the DVD in her house and watching it, then writing short stories about zombies, and it just became more and more a part of her daily
Yeah,
experience.
and you know, like I've heard from some of our Fast Fluency Formula members that one of their fears is actually speaking in a foreign language with other people. And of course, this means English for our members. And I think one of the advantages of the method we offer is that it gives people an opportunity to practice speaking out loud on their own, you know, in without having to deal with right. other people. They can do it right. in the car. They can do it in the privacy of their own home. And that builds confidence
yeah.
so that when you do get together with a group of people or a conversation partner, you know, you can take it in stages
right.
and you've practiced it so many times. Now, if you have a conversation on the exact same topic that you practice many times, you know, you've got that confidence
right.
that you've practiced it many times. You can do it. You know you can do it.
Right.
And now you're in a situation where you do it. And if you come away with that, come away from that situation, having had a successful conversation, it's like, wow, I can totally do this. You know, so that's one of the good things I think about our method and our materials is it gives people a chance to, you know, walk down that fear ladder or walk
right.
up that fear ladder
right.
with stages. So, yeah, definitely fear. So, do you expect to get over any of your fears of water anytime soon? Or?
Well, yeah, you know, it really doesn't affect my life. I don't live at the beach.
Yeah.
But you know, I would like to become a better swimmer.
Uh-huh.
Just feel, less, like I have the vulnerability.
Yeah.
You
well,
know.
It certainly is a great exercise.
Yeah.
And as you get older, it's the kind of exercise you can be doing to, cause it's not hard on your joints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah,
and I'm a terrible swimmer too.
Yeah,
and I'm actually a little bit afraid of the water, although maybe not as much as you. But yeah, that's something
yeah.
I would like to.
I'd like to get better, but the problem is most swimming training is either for beginners.
Uh-huh.
It's like I know how to swim, I'm just
yeah.
not very good at it.
Yeah,
or it's for like triathletes,
right?
Like
right.
Real athletes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember my friend who's a poor swimmer. She maybe you've heard the story. She wanted to improve her swimming, and she ended up unbeknownst to her enrolling in a swimming course taught by like, you know, Olympians.
Wow.
And with like athletes, all like triathletes.
Oh no, that's not where you want to be. So there you have it.
There you have it. Well, one thing that I thought was interesting was the story of the Essex. And one thing I didn't mention in that piece was, this was actually the inspiration for Herman Melville's story, Moby Dick.
Oh, really? So he knew about that story before he wrote Moby Dick.
Right. So the survivors, well, just to recap that story,
yeah.
You know, these are whalers,
yeah.
U.S. whalers. They had to come down from the East Coast
uh-huh.
Down to the southern tip of South America
wow,
and then around
way,
to the West Coast.
Wow.
And that took them 5 weeks.
Only?
Yeah, I was actually surprised. I thought it would
yeah,
take
especially
longer.
Especially back in those days.
But
I
maybe there's good winds going down that way.
How about
way.
That? Wow.
So 5 weeks to get over there to where they thought they were going to hit, you know, whale central.
Yeah.
And no whales. And then they hear from other sailors, well, you got to go 3,000 kilometers west.
Which is way out in the Pacific
yeah,
somewhere.
Yeah, it's pretty much the middle of nowhere. It's as,
yeah.
as nowhere as you can get
right.
into the Pacific Ocean.
Right.
And they get out there, they spot whales, and this mammoth whale just rams them. And it was the first recorded story of a whale intentionally attacking a ship, just head-on ramming it.
Wow, that's pretty scary.
And apparently this whale was stunned,
uh-huh.
and they had harpoons.
Yeah.
So they were aiming a harpoon to kill this whale, but
yeah.
the whale was so close, it was stunned so close to the rudder
yeah.
of the ship
yeah.
that they were afraid that harpooning it might make it thrash and destroy the ship.
Right.
So they held back,
yeah.
and then the which maybe was a big mistake
because uh-huh.
the whale came to and then started swimming away, turned around,
oh
and then rammed him again.
Sounds like a horror story.
Yeah. And the huge hole in the ship went down.
Oh,
and it's really interesting, the first recorded story of a whale doing that.
Wow.
So there definitely was some intelligence. The whale knew these were enemies.
This was an enemy.
Yeah.
This was a danger. Yeah.
That the whale had to take out.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had three small vessels that they used for chasing whales
uh-huh.
that were apparently really dinky,
yeah.
really fragile.
Yeah.
And they got on those and they scavenged as much of the food and water they could from the wreckage. And a lot of this
uh-huh.
food was full of salt water.
Uh-huh.
So it was unedible.
Yeah.
Or it was edible, but it would just make them more thirsty.
Yeah.
and they had really limited supplies of water.
Oh man.
And they pretty, like in the story, they pretty much had three choices. One choice, they could head for Hawaii.
Which was really far
which
away.
Which is really
right?
far. Yeah. Actually the first choice was they could head to the Marquesa Islands. Uh-huh. And these islands, they had heard rumors, which apparently were not true.
Yeah.
That there were cannibals there.
Right.
And that was the closest.
Yeah.
The closest place. Second closest was Hawaii.
Yeah.
But they knew, they had some pretty solid evidence that there were bad storms
yeah.
that time of year. So
yeah.
it would be quite dangerous in their dinky boats.
Right.
And then the third option was to go all the way back to South America
yeah,
in a dinky little,
yeah,
not
crazy.
Like a giant
yeah.
sailing ship.
Right. And they would starve to death or die of thirst. Or
yeah,
something.
They had, yeah. they figured that for the amount of survivors they had enough for about 60 days
yeah.
and they would take them
so
much
So it seems
longer.
The logical choice would be to head for the islands where the
yeah.
cannibals are.
Yeah.
But
what's interesting is this writer who gave this really interesting TED talk that we'll provide the links to.
Uh-huh.
And she talks about how she's a writer and she talks about how this is a perfect example of how fear is a story. It's a story that we tell,
you uh-huh.
know, it's a story with a plot.
Sure,
it's a story.
Create
we
it.
Use our imagination,
yeah.
but I really like the way she put it. It's not just that we're the writers of our fears.
Mm-hmm.
We're also the readers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just like when we read anything, we don't get on the internet and we just don't accept everything we read.
Sure.
We critically judge.
Right.
Okay, what's the source of this?
Right.
Is this rational?
Yeah.
Is this logical?
Right.
Is this something I should follow?
Right.
And, you know, like we've talked about before, fears are not always bad. Fears can help us survive
sure.
a lot of times.
Sure.
So they were in a critical juncture, a critical decision between these three fears, which is the most realistic. And they got caught up. They let their imaginations get carried away with them. And they got caught up in the most sensationalist
mm-hmm.
Fear, which was cannibals.
Right.
And, you know, so they took the most irrational choice of going the farthest distance when they knew that their food wasn't going to last.
Right.
I mean, this food was full of salt water.
Yeah, it's almost like accepting a death sentence.
I mean, this
really,
food,
yeah.
it was making them more thirsty.
Right.
And they didn't have enough water.
Right.
It came to the point where they were drinking their own pee.
Yeah.
And then it came to the point where they were killing each other.
Right.
There was, I think on one of the ships, they actually drew lots.
Mm-hmm.
Like who was going to die. They had a pistol.
And be eaten?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so it wasn't like just all chaos. They decided
right.
we're going to do this. We're gonna make a decision that's as fair as possible. So they drew straws.
Oh, man.
And the one who pulled the shortest straw was the youngest, like some kid.
Uh-huh.
And actually the captain
yeah.
was kind of had some sort of relationship with him. Like he was sworn to protect him. Like maybe
yeah.
he knew his family or
uh-huh.
something. So I think the captain actually said like, I'll take your place.
Uh-huh.
And the kid, who wasn't that young, maybe 16 or so,
right.
said, no, like, I'm as happy with this straw as any.
Okay.
And then they had to draw straws again.
To find out who would do the deed.
Who would kill him.
Yeah.
Because they had a pistol, who was going
right.
to shoot him. And that was on one boat. And there were three boats. And there was, I think, cannibalism happening at least on two of the boats.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah. That's what they're most
like that
fear.
Was their most fear
and
most afraid of
yeah.
and that's what they had resorted
yeah.
to doing to each
yeah.
other. Isn't that crazy?
So they had food yeah. for 60 days. The few that survived, I think there was maybe three or four that survived
mm-hmm.
out of those 20 something sailors.
Yeah.
They were picked up 90 days later.
I see. Wow, 90 days.
90 days and they had 60 days worth of food. So.
Man, they must have been pretty emaciated.
Yeah. But back to this idea of
yeah.
like, you know, they weren't only the creators of these stories. They were also had some responsibility to
sure.
be the judges.
Well,
of
that's
these stories.
That's a big part of fear. I mean, there certainly is a biological basis for fear.
Yeah.
That's what's kept us alive all
yeah.
these millennia. But
yeah.
But yeah, I think we make our fears a lot worse by what we feed into them
yeah.
with our own imagination, our own thoughts. And
yeah.
More often than not, they're totally irrational.
Yeah.
They're totally hysterical. They're crazy things that
yeah.
we imagine and
yeah.
they're not true at all.
Yeah.
And that's another approach to dealing with fear is challenging those assumptions, challenging those beliefs that are associated with the fear. Is it logical? Is it rational?
Right.
Is there evidence to support it? And more often than not, there isn't any evidence.
Right.
It's
right.
like the fear of flying. It's
yeah.
like you're way more likely to die on the way to the airport in a car
yeah.
than you
yeah.
are flying, you know,
yeah.
30,000 feet in the air
yeah.
going 500 miles an hour. So,
Well, I'll put the link in the PDF for everybody to watch. You should watch it too. It's a really
Okay.
interesting
All right, I
talk.
will. I will.